Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We had psychologists, psychiatrists on our team of expert witnesses, and of course they said that this is an abusive practice and not a therapeutic practice. And that was the justification they gave. The truth is, it was a way of, another way of maintaining control over the boys, similar or comparable to reading all of their mail and censoring all the negative comments. They wanted to control the boys completely. And I guess their theory was, these boys are severely damaged and we need to completely remake them.
From iHeartRadio, London Audio, and executive producer Paris Hilton, this is Trapped in Treatment, exposing the inner workings of one teen treatment facility each season. We're your hosts. I'm Rebecca Mellinger.
And I'm Caroline Cole, one troubled teen industry survivor.
And one investigator.
On a mission to expose the truths of an industry plagued by controversy and to make sure that no child has to experience the hell that is teen treatment.
So on last week's episode, we started to dive into the money. These facilities are bringing in millions of dollars annually to care for these kids. So it really begs the question, what type of care are they providing?
So one of the issues that you and I have seen as we've embarked on this journey is that there's just really not a solid understanding of what treatment is for young people, right? As adults, we know that if we go to get treatment somewhere, there's going to be a doctor. We know that it's going to be based in evidence-based practices, and there's going to be a certain level of true mental health treatment. But when it comes to these young people, that's not always the case. And in this episode, we're about to discover where this actually came from.
So let's dive in. And before we do so, I just want to warn you that we are going to be discussing very sensitive topics. So just over the course of the next few episodes, please take care of yourself and listen with discretion.
If there was ever a Hollywood movie made about PCS, Dr. Eugene Thorne would be the evil leading character. He became the director of Provo Canyon School, leaving an imprint of aversive conditioning techniques that would become the hallmark of the industry. Locked in rooms for hours at a time, hooked up to machines that they thought could read their mind, Dr. Eugene Thorne was convinced that it didn't matter what the root cause of bad behavior was, just that it could be changed. With the right tactics. Today, we hear his story as we dissect the background of one of the most influential historical characters in Provo's history and his obsession with the theory of behavior modification. Dennis Eugene Thorne, Denny for short, was born the middle of three sons in a middle to lower class family. He was a difficult child, one prone to fights and running with the wrong crowd. In the seventh grade, he was kicked out of school due to a complete disregard for authority figures. His attitude may have stemmed from a difficult home life, which was crystallized by his parents' divorce when he was just 12 years old. A tough kid, he was left to fend for himself during his teenage years. He worked on a series of ranches for a bit, getting into fistfights and standoffs with locals, before moving on to the next opportunity. He eventually enrolled in the Air Force at the age of 17, flying around the world for the next few years. At 20, he could hardly read at about a third grade level. So when his aunt introduced him to the Church of Latter-day Saints, and he was able to read the entire Book of Mormon without a problem, he took it as a sign from God. A turning point. This is the moment that young Denny became Eugene, a man of faith, who even went on to serve as a missionary. Eventually, he studied psychology at Brigham Young University, a highly regarded local Mormon institution, known for turning out top psychologists. This is also where he met and married his wife, Myrna, who was also fascinated with the world of psychology and would later earn a master's degree in special education. Interestingly, her thesis was titled Behavior Modification Intervention Programs with Underachievers. During his studies at BYU, Thorne became increasingly interested with hypnosis, but would later shift his research towards behavior modification using aversive conditioning. Over the course of several years, he became a professor, eventually running the psychology department and sitting on the chair of the board at BYU. He claimed through his techniques he could treat a wide range of conditions, including tics, twitching, hiccups, thumb sucking, nail biting, bedwetting, and sexual deviancy. He was breaking boundaries in the field, focused on the effectiveness of aversive conditioning as treatment, even claiming to cure a boy of a long case of hiccups through electroshock treatment. He was obsessed with behavior modification theory and the use of negative consequences and reinforcement to alter human behavior.
Behavior modification is based on the idea that to create lasting behavioral change, good behavior must be rewarded and bad behavior punished. Tactics such as isolation, physical punishment, and mental stress are all methods used to try and break the patient's behavioral patterns through force. We caught up with Dr. Reamer to discuss.
There are different definitions out there. There's the field of psychology definition, which is using, conditioning, B.F. Skinner, operant conditioning, classical conditioning. That's behavior modification, using rewards and penalties to shape behavior. That's kind of the narrow definition. And there are many programs that use behavior modification in a responsible way. So I have visited programs that work with children who are nonverbal. They may have autism. Left to their own devices, they may engage in severely self-harming behavior, banging their head against the wall till they give themselves concussions, scratching themselves till they bleed, gouging an eye out, and I'm not exaggerating. There are times when I think ethical, constructive behavior modification may be necessary to protect these children. But then there's behavior modification in the more vernacular sense of the term, loosely defined, without strict protocols. It's a program that says on the website, our model is character education. But if you pull back the curtain, staff believe the way to modify behavior is by screaming at kids, labeling kids, calling them names, threatening kids, disciplining them with segregation, isolation. They call it behavior modification. I'm repeating myself. It's like anything else. It's the same term. There's a right way to modify behavior that I think meets the standard of care to which I referred earlier. And there's a way to modify behavior that so violates our understanding of the standard of care regarding modification of behavior that it's an insult to use that phrase. It's abuse, pure and simple, camouflaged as behavior modification.
How does behavior modification then relate to the term aversive conditioning?
So aversive conditioning, which is a behavior modification term, historically has been used when, for example, a child who's nonverbal, severe autism, like I described a few moments ago, is engaging in self-harming behaviors, that can be life-threatening. And there are some programs that will apply a mild shock, an electric shock, as an aversive. There are some programs that have used spray bottles with water as an aversive. So this has been around a long time. Some of it's controversial. Some of it, that's not my field. But some professionals say there are times when we have to use aversives. Otherwise, this kid's going to die or become brain damaged. So there are some aversives which meet standard of care in some narrow circumstances. But then, once again, there are, in my judgment, some horribly abusive programs, which may not use the language of aversive conditioning. It may not be in their policy manual, their program manual. It rarely is, but that's what they're doing. And if this kid is going to talk back to the staff member in this way, if this kid is not going to participate in group discussions, if this kid's going to act out, we're going to show him who's boss, and we're going to impose, and this is the language, negative consequences. We're going to impose aversives. What are the aversives? Isolation, segregation. You're not going to have regular meals in the dining room. You're going to have peanut butter, and that's it. That's an aversive. You were going to go on the field trip next week. You're not going on that trip. We were going to let you call your parents tonight. We're not going to let you do that. We're going to extend your stay. You don't like it here? You continue to behave this way? We're going to extend your stay. Aversive, 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 aversive. They might call it aversive conditioning. I don't think a professionally trained psychologist would call that aversive conditioning. They would call it abuse.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
We heard from Maya Salovitz in episode 1, the author of Help at Any Cost, How the Troubled Teen Industry Cons Parents and Hurts Kids. She agrees that many of these programs veer far off the path of basic conditioning.
There are very few ways you can terrorize a person into compliance without leaving marks. And these are the same tactics you will see in troubled teen programs. You will see in, quotes, brainwashing programs by governments. And you will see in programs that basically are cults. So you disorient them. You make them feel powerless. You make them feel that you're the only person that they can get, or the group is the only way they can get relief, and compliance is the only way they will be accepted. You sleep deprivation, food deprivation, isolation, social humiliation. All of these things don't physically leave a mark. You might use, you know, exercise to the point of exhaustion, stress positions. All of these things are incredibly stressful. And when people are under stress, they sort of regress to more primitive areas of the brain just to survive. And so you're not really as capable of abstract thought, you know, when you're being chased by a tiger or when you're being put in one of these incredibly stressful situations. And so you're not learning as well as you do. You are not thinking as clearly as you normally do. You'll tend to accept ridiculous ideas in ways that you wouldn't normally do. You just got to survive it, right? And so it puts people into this mode where the only thing they're trying to do is like survive so they can get out of there.
So this sounds like torture to me. I mean, how would you characterize this type of treatment?
Yeah, I would characterize certainly some of it rises to the level of torture.
And some felt that's exactly what Dr. Thorne was doing. In 1976, Dr. Thorne teamed up with Dr. Reed Payne at Brigham Young University, Dr. Thorne's alma mater, to perform a series of experiments using aversion therapy. The team utilized a variety of now debunked practices intended to cure homosexuality. One of the studies experimented on 14 gay male subjects to determine if using photographs of nude men and women from Playboy-type magazines was helpful in electroshock therapy. These 14 men participated in 22 shock therapy sessions, lasting 50 minutes each over the course of 3 months. Before the shock therapy sessions, each participant was required to sign a release form that informed them that damage to tissue or organs may occur, and that they would be looking at sensitive materials, probably contrary to their values, aka porn, and that BYU would be released from any responsibility for any damage done to them.
A psychology intern at BYU named Ray assisted in giving electric shock. We read his account of what would take place in these sessions. The volunteers would come in 3 times a week. They would tape electrodes to their groin, thigh, chest, and armpits. There was another machine that monitored their heart rate and breathing. If their vitals changed when looking at homosexual imagery, they would turn a dial. This dial controlled the electricity that would shock the young men. Ray says they would start with a low current, but from what he could see, it looked really painful. Electroshock is a terrifying form of behavior modification and highlights the cruel and unusual methodology behind Thorne's work. Only 2 years after these experiments, Thorne became the executive director of Provo Canyon School, bringing his homophobic and abusive practices with him. Over the next several years, therapies that Thorne had researched and upheld became the standard of treatment at PCS. 2 of these controversial therapies were isolation and polygraph testing. Young boys and girls would be hooked up to machines, with nodes and a graph, watching the needle that would jump whenever they lied. These practices had nothing to do with therapy or healing. They were a method of control. The damage done is far-reaching. We had the incredible opportunity of speaking with Mark Soler, an attorney who got an inside look at Provo Canyon School during that time. He had the chance to observe and interview many students. He was particularly shocked by the use of polygraph testing.
What the procedure was at Provo Canyon School, when a new boy was admitted to the school, they would put the boy in a room at a desk with a pad of paper, and they would tell the boy, write down all of the bad things you've done in your life. and they'd give them plenty of time. And many of these boys had been involved in minor delinquency and been in trouble. The ones who were sent by juvenile courts were sent there because they were involved in some kind of delinquent behavior. But I saw all the records of all of the kids. There were no kids who were involved in violent behavior, serious violence against persons. Most of the boys there were boys who were from middle-class families who acted out as teenagers, and the parents got tired of messing with their kids, and they wanted to do something very similar to the experience that that Paris had when she was growing up. And so they would tell the boys, write down all the bad things you've done. When the boys were finished and had made their list, they would take the boys into a different room, hook them up into a polygraph, and they would ask the boys, have you confessed all of your sins? That's a different question. It's a question that is inappropriate for someone on a polygraph. I did a lot of research in those days and learned a lot about polygraphs. There are very good reasons why polygraph results are not admitted into evidence in court anywhere in the country, because they are unreliable. Polygraphs are especially unreliable on adolescents because they are still in the process of growing. Polygraphs use a variety of indicators, galvanic skin response and blood pressure. And those things go up and down in adolescents in ways that don't necessarily accurately reflect whether they're telling the truth or not. But the experience was incredibly traumatic for the boys. All they knew from polygraphs was this is what they do on television shows when they have violent criminals and they're trying to coerce a confession out of the criminals. The boys also came to believe, or some of them came to believe, that the machines could read their minds. Because on some of the matters, when the boys said something, the polygraph said they were telling the truth and it was true, or that they were lying and it was true. Not all of them. And they never knew exactly which were which, but for some of them, the polygraph did have an accurate reading, and the boys freaked out. They thought this machine actually could tell what they were thinking. Again, incredibly emotionally and mentally traumatic for the boys.
Imagine thinking that a machine could read your mind as a teenager. Every personal and private thought is now up for analysis. Already immersed in an environment where your privacy is at bare minimum, to think that the staff could also see inside your mind was inherently coercive and extremely intrusive. Nowhere was safe. If a student refused to take the polygraph, they would be punished and could not advance within the program. Boys were subject to punishment not only for what the polygraph revealed that they had done, but also for what the polygraph showed that they thought about doing. The school also used the polygraph to prevent the flow of any negative information about the school. Boys entered into agreements and even formal contracts with the school to obey the rules and avoid negative thinking, which included saying bad things about the school.
We wanted to know why in the world did they think that a polygraph was a therapeutic instrument for troubled teenagers. And we took depositions of the owners, and Gene Thorne became the spokesperson for the owners. He was a clinical psychologist, PhD level, and he became the spokesperson for the facility. And he said that he did it based on research. And we asked, who did the research? And he said, I did. And I said, where did you do the research? And he said, at Provo Canyon School. And we said, is there anything published in any journal anywhere in the world that backs this up? And he said, no, my research is sufficient.
Dr. Thorne was convinced that he had the answers. At the time, he was racking up accolades, writing books, and speaking on topics that few others in his field understood. So he considered himself the expert, and as the executive director at PCS, he answered to himself. And it wasn't just polygraphs used to control the boys. There was isolation, too. The rooms are small and barren. They keep them cold. This is a detail they fail to cover in the parent handbook, a method they forgot to mention in their advertisements.
Solitary confinement goes by many names. solitary confinement, isolation, separation, segregation, administrative segregation, lots of other names, but it's all the same thing. All of it involves involuntarily locking up a child in a room. Generally, the rooms are 8 by 10 or smaller. The rooms, to give you a perspective, the usual room I see children in solitary confinement measures about 6 by 8 or 8 by 10. It's about the size of a parking space in a shopping mall parking lot. If you looked at the dimensions of the parking space, that's about the size of the room that kids were in. And actually, in Provo Canyon School, the prescription rooms, the P rooms, were about half that size. These were not much bigger than closets that the kids were put in, often for very long periods of time. And we define, in our campaign, we define solitary confinement as any involuntary confinement of a young people, of a young person in a locked room for any reason other than as a temporary response to behavior by the young person that immediately threatens the health or safety of another child or the staff. In other words, young people should not be locked up in their rooms except when they are out of control. There are young people who certainly get out of control. They get very, very angry. They may strike out. They may get into a fight with another young person. When that happens, there's nothing wrong with separating the two boys, putting them in their rooms for a chance to calm down. Giving them a quiet place to be to calm down is a very good way of addressing the situation. But the key is, as soon as they calm down, they should go back into regular activities in the program. And what happened in Provo Canyon School and what happens in lots of places around the country is that the young people, when they lose their temper, when they get into a fight, they're put into their rooms for a set amount of time. It might be 4 hours or 8 hours or a day.
Sent to these rooms for blocks at a time, with no distraction or mental stimulation. Solitary confinement is a tactic used in prisons, meant as the ultimate punishment. Complete isolation. Its use has been debated as cruel and unusual.
Anybody who wants to know what solitary confinement is like, you can do this in your own home and get a sense of what it's like. Go into one of the bathrooms in your home, take out the magazines and any other reading material, take out the radio, take all the cosmetics and other things off the counter so there's nothing in there except you, and put the seat down on the toilet and sit on it and set the timer on your cell phone for 10 minutes and sit there for 10 minutes. It's very, very hard to do. We are social people we're biologically social people, and we need to have interaction with other people. And solitary confinement is a cruel way of stopping us from having normal social interaction with other people.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Isolation, solitary confinement. Such little social contact is bad for even the strongest of us. So what about for a child? We wanted to know what these tactics do to someone over the long term. Here's Dr. Reamer.
What I've observed is a teenager who struggles to begin with. Remember, the vast majority of teens who end up in these programs struggle. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying they have struggled. That's how all this happened. Not their fault that they have a biological inclination toward anxiety or depression, which interfered with their schoolwork, which got them into arguments with their parents and yelling and screaming. And the kid ran away from home. And it turns out the kid is depressed and anxious. And the kid starts self-medicating with substances because he or she hates their life. And they end up in one of these programs. So they come into these programs typically with all kinds of struggles. And their behavior sometimes can be challenging in these programs. Not every kid is compliant. Some are not. And so staff sometimes react with what we've just referred to as aversives, not in the professional use of the term aversives, with the isolation, with the segregation, with the name calling, with the screaming, with the hitting, with the deprivation. And here's what I've seen over and over and over again. Already fragile self-esteem takes a nosedive. A lot of these kids are not feeling great about themselves to begin with, but now they've got this steady diet of unrelenting verbal abuse and they feel even worse about themselves. Suicidal ideation may be exacerbated. I've had my moments when I don't want to live, but now I really don't want to live because I hate this, the way I'm being treated. So increased depression, increased anxiety, reduce self-esteem, increase suicidal ideation, cutting. I've met many kids who under this unrelenting verbal, physical, sexual abuse will start cutting for the first time or again. They may have been in remission. I've seen kids take paper clips and they'll snap the paper clips so that the edges are rough and sharp and they'll scrape their arms till they bleed horrifically, because they're trying to cope with this abuse. I know of kids who've run away. If they're not in a locked program, and most of these programs are not locked, they're out of there. They climb out the window, they run, because they got to get out of there. I've seen with some of these kids, either the onset of or the exacerbation of substance use, because they're in so much pain. And I'm not excusing this, I'm trying to explain this. They are so miserable that they'll self-medicate without truly understanding the road that they may be embarking on with the substance use. So the whole range of mental health, behavioral health challenges that struggling teenagers may encounter, if they are subjected to emotional, physical, sexual abuse that we know has occurred in some of these programs, what they experience, pretty much the same list of mental health, behavioral health challenges with an exponent on steroids. The symptoms can be deeper, they can be wider, and sometimes kids die as a result. Lifelong emotional scars. When I watched the footage of the interview in This Is Paris, where Paris and her former program participants talked about the legacy of their experience at Provo Canyon, there you have it. The legacy is long, it's deep, it's wide. Abuse that teens experience in these programs at age 15 or 16, they talk about this at age 25 and 26, and age 35 and 36, and sometimes 45 and 46 and on, it stays with them. We've all heard the term PTSD. Maybe sometimes it's overused, but this is serious post-traumatic stress that's genuine.
In the spring of 1978, PCS came up against one of the largest battles it would ever fight. A lawsuit filed by the ACLU was begun on the testimony of two boys who ran away, shackled at the ankles and desperate to escape.
Kathy Collard called me and said, "We have a very bizarre situation here. A young boy named Ken Rice escaped from a school in Provo and went to the local police station and went to the police and said that boys are being mistreated, abused, and manhandled at the Provo Canyon School."
Next time on Trapped in Treatment.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.